Thank you for listening to KURU 89.1 on your FM dial, and you can stream online at gmcr.org, Gila Members Community Radio in Silver City, New Mexico. Thanks for tuning in to Tuesday Morning Beat. My name's Mary McHugh. Be with you till 10 a.m., and I'm so happy to have with me today Martha Martinez Del Rio from Citizens Climate Lobby. Good morning, Martha. Hey. Thank you for joining me. How are you this morning?
Marie, I'm doing great, and I really am thankful for the opportunity to be able to come and talk about climate change. We're having some hot spell, and we're going to have more, and we should be thinking about why.
You're with the Citizens Climate Lobby. Tell us about that organization.
I'm a volunteer with Citizens Climate Lobby, and it's a national group that's trying to build the political will for a livable world. And it's a climate change organization, so they focus on climate remediation bills in Congress, among other things. That's the big push. And we work really hard to enable people to be involved individually, to have some personal agency in advocating for climate change, and making sure people who do that are informed and know what they're talking about and who they should talk to.
How is it going?
It's going forward, and that's what's very encouraging.
It's
nice to be in an organization that provides some optimism and hope for this daunting issue that we're faced with.
So this is an election year. Are you busier than usual?
We are busier every year when it comes to legislation. And I think in terms of election years, we are trying to just be sure people are aware of legislators that work on climate issues. And if that's their focus, they get to be a climate voter.
Mm-hmm. How do you get the word out? How do you do that?
Well, how do we do all this? Well,
yes, how do you do all of this?
I think a large part of any organization that wants change is education and getting the word out to people in separate ways. Citizens Climate Lobby in particular trains individuals to do lobbying in Congress, as well as doing work on the ground more locally. Can we dive back a little bit and talk about how we got to where we are? Can I tell you a little bit about how Citizens Lobby got started?
Yes, let's get the backstory, you bet,
yeah,
before we take the deep dive.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a big group that now has over 530 chapters around the country and also around the world. It's a young group. We started in 2008, and it all started with an entrepreneur, a businessman in California. He was very successful in helping poor folks get microloans around the world, and he realized that when climate change starts to set its ugly paws on our everyday lives, that the poor folks in particular are really going to be affected. He wanted to know how we could do something. He got involved with some of Al Gore's work and started to lecture people on how personally you can change your life to help affect climate, but he also came to realize that's not enough. He learned how to go to Congress and how to lobby, and then he decided what I need to do is start a group that would actually train citizens in the U.S. to be lobbyists, to advocate for change, and do it to all our representatives. So that's how the group got started and legislated.
Do we have a name for this amazing person?
Marshall Saunders. Marshall Saunders, thank you. Marshall Saunders has since passed away. He died a couple years ago, but he's left behind a legacy of thousands of people who are on the mission to spread the word and spread the word for how to get involved and how to be active. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anyways, let me tell you a little bit about one branch of what Citizens Climate Lobby does is actually, yes, lobby members of Congress, where we get people from each of our groups to train, learn how to be communicators with legislators, and then use those skills to go to local offices and speak to community organizers, and also go to Washington, D.C. and speak to our senators and our representatives. And that's how I got involved. I've been involved with some other organizational groups where we did lots of work that seemed very scattered, and Citizens Climate Lobby was just super focused on one issue. And I thought, wow, I'd like to learn how to go and speak to my representatives and have a voice and have my voice heard. The group meets twice a year, June and November, and trains on the Hill. We're having a big lobby session this coming June in 2 weeks, We're expecting to have over 1,000 individuals show up for training and to lobby every single member of Congress through our individual small groups.
Are you pretty well received?
We have been very well received because our focus has been you need to act professionally, you need to be a listener as well as a talker. We try very hard to make all our focus to be bipartisan. It's important that bills through Congress that are bipartisan have longer longevity. They tend to be better supported. They tend to not be overturned when administrations change. And we work really, really hard on building relationships. If we don't have a relationship in a congressional office, we are not respected, and we'd like to be turned to for advice. If there are questions in an office about what a bill is about, we've got some experts on our panel and our team, and we'll find out the information and share that.
I like what you say about having it be bipartisan.
It's so important. You know, we just we flip-flop some of our legislative passes because we're very contentious at the moment. So it's good if we get support that's going to be long-lasting.
How do you approach somebody who may not be interested in it, or is a climate science denier?
That's
a big question.
That's a big question. And when we first started lobbying Congress, honestly, we had to speak to congressional members that themselves were not believers in climate change. And we want to thank everybody who's made enough publicity that we are all talking about climate change. But how we do that is there are particular bills and goals that are going to work towards improving the atmosphere in which we live. So if we want to look at the big picture of how we've come to a situation where pollution levels are so high that our temperatures are rising, we want to make sure that we all work together on legislation that's somehow going to curb and or decrease the amount of pollution in our air, otherwise, you know, known as carbon. So if there are bills that are coming across in Congress that are going to help promote change, those are the bills that we support. Let me give you, for instance, one of our very happy successes we've had lobbying in Congress is for the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act. That is the largest climate change bill that's ever been passed in the United States and in history. Unfortunately, this was not a super bipartisan pass. This was passed on Democratic lines only. But the bill itself is going to make and provide for some good changes where we get to reduce our pollution levels over time, and that's going to help reduce our overall carbon levels in the atmosphere. The issue being, however, it's a great start, and we're going to make some trends towards meeting some goals set by the Paris climate talks, but we are not going to make the goal of by 2030 of reducing our emissions fully by 50%. Because we need to do even more than what that bill advocates for. We should be very excited in New Mexico, I think. The Inflation Reduction Act made a lot of good tax relief incentives for people and businesses to work towards cleaner energy, getting refunds for things we can do. And our state of New Mexico is one of the forerunners of states that also provides some tax relief for when we do individually based things in our own homes, like putting up solar panels or driving electric cars or switching to energy efficient heating and cooling systems. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. And then Citizens Climate Lobby, our group, would be one of the forefront lobbyists in Congress that we're pushing for that bill and will continue to push for similar bills. This coming session, we're really going to be pushing for one of the biggest things we need to move forward, which is permitting reform. It sounds like a daunting task. What is permitting reform? When we try to build these new electric systems that are going to be more efficient, we have to have some means of moving this new production of energy around the country. Currently, if a project wants to get started, it takes about 10 years for the permit to be finalized. It has to go through multiple agencies at the federal and state level. It has to meet approvals of the Environmental Protection Agency. And somehow we've made a Goliath of a problem of a long, long process. So there's movement in Congress to try to streamline this process. And we're lobbying with our own group to make sure that this process includes the inclusion of communities so that the communities are aware of what's going on and have a voice early on the onset of a project. We cannot forego environmental safety precautions, so we're making sure that these bills include that. And then the other thing, you know, there's redundancy in the permitting process, and probably the best way to decrease time for doing this is to try to roll multiple agencies into a single one that can streamline the process. So come June 11th on Lobby Day, we're going to be pushing for permitting reform.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Well, kudos to you. That's huge.
It is huge.
Yeah.
It
will you be going to Washington?
I'm not going this year. I've gone twice for a New Mexico legislation in the last few years, which has been great. That was post-COVID when we started again. Mm-hmm. And where I used to live in Wyoming, I was able to also be a volunteer lobbyist in Wyoming. That was a challenge. Our state there is a giant coal producer. We have some oil and gas here in New Mexico, but Wyoming was a tough one to legislate. I learned how to be a polite listener and also how to politely move discussion towards remediation.
Pretend that I'm a climate denier. Pretend that I'm an elected official who denies climate science. What would you say to me?
You know, I think how
just pretend, because I'm really not.
How I speak to you, it's going to be a little bit in my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I might say, oh, wow. You know, it's been so hot lately, and we've had some huge fires here in New Mexico, and I'm really worried, and I'm not sure what I can do as a person, you know, to work on fires. What do you think we should do? I would ask you a question and see how you think.
Put them into the position of being a problem solver.
A problem solver, and maybe my vocabulary wouldn't say carbon reduction and emissions. I would say, I'm just concerned it's hot, mm-hmm. you know? And not go there. And then you would tell me what you feel, and I would listen and say, uh-huh. And then maybe I might be able to somehow, you know, put a nudge in the direction of, wow, we have a lot of pollution. Maybe that pollution has something to do with it. But I wouldn't say climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, it's a vocabulary deal.
It is. What about my vote? Is that in the vocabulary? I guess you can't do that as a lobbyist. Can you?
I can just say choose your legislators who support what you feel is important in terms mm-hmm, of, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Vote for the person who represents your interests.
Exactly.
What you feel is important.
Exactly. And, you know, it can be totally regardless of party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
true.
How we come better bipartisanship people.
That is very true. That's very wise, Martha. Wow. Thank you for that. Gosh. Yeah, because it takes a skill to have a conversation about something that's so important to you with a person who doesn't believe that that's a problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and I think one of the important things that we should be doing, if there are enough of us that think it's a problem, is we need to voice our opinions. You know, this is a monumental existential issue when we look at what climate change could be doing, and we could give up and not do anything, or we could say, hey, I'm going to look at this problem and I'm going to work on changing it, not only myself, but I'm going to talk to my friends, my family, and I want them also to be aware and to vote and to speak.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yes. And it's so there's like a lateral flow of information as well.
I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the big things that our group does is when we try to have these local chapters and groups who build this community involvement to go out and speak it, on the radio, make letters happen to your editor, and speak in your churches, speak at your Rotary clubs, talk to people about, one, this, what the issue is, and two, what we could do about it.
And in addition to writing letters and so forth, what other types of actions should people be doing?
You know, personal action also is important, but we need to also make sure we're not over-consuming just because we need to. We should be conserving at home, conserving electricity, conserving water, right? We know that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Particularly in the Southwest Desert.
Yep.
Indeed.
I think that's very true.
Yes.
If you're interested in actually having something to do and you wanted to find out about Citizens Climate Lobby, I'll say this a few times, citizensclimatelobby.org is the website. And there's a way to take action through them. The organization makes it very easy for you to be involved. They send a monthly action to you either by email or by a text message, and it's just something usually related to a legislative bill. So it would be, please write your congressman/senator about this bill called the Prove It Act that's going to be coming up soon. And you would either click some buttons on your email and send your letter in, or actually pick up the phone and talk to your representative's office about a particular bill. So that's one way you could get involved just as a person.
You said it's called the Prove It?
The Prove It Act is a new bill the Senate just passed.
Uh-huh.
And it's a bill that's to analyze how many carbon units are in some of the large industrial projects going on, steel production, fertilizer, concrete. Those are all things that quantifiably might tell us a little bit about how much fossil fuels we're using. It's become important as an economic international trade issue, because if we're producing a product and it's expensive and another country's producing it and it's cheap, but they're doing it on the dirty pollution side, maybe we don't want to import their goods. And if we can quantify maybe what it costs to have cleaner production of an item, and at the exchange of international trade, make some sort of, they call it a carbon border adjustment, make an adjustment because one place is cheating the earth and polluting the earth to make something cheap. Well, that's not correct. We don't want to do that. It won't help us clean up this pollution mess we're in. So the Prove It Act is a bill that's addressed in Congress to start the process of understanding what we produce in this country. Mm-hmm. And that way we can do better international trade. The European Union in 2026 is going to start actually putting tariffs on things with high carbon costs that come into Europe. And that if that becomes an international norm, we should not be left behind.
What's the status of the Prove It Act right now?
It has passed through committee in the Senate, and it's going to the House, so it needs to be reviewed in the House. So this is like one of the big challenges of any good idea or process is how it gets through and becomes legislation. Mm-hmm. It starts in a committee in either the Senate or the House. It has to be approved by that committee. Then it goes to the floor, and then it has to be voted on. If it happens in the Senate, then it has to go to the House. And then when it's in both of those, you know, they trade them back and forth and make changes. So it's a process. It takes a long time.
It does take a long time.
It takes a very long time. So we need to be patient. It's happening, and if we make our voices heard, we hope it's going to push through a little quicker.
And as you said earlier, don't give up.
Don't give up, and time is a little bit of the essence, so we need to be doing some pushing. Citizens Climate Lobby started with just one agenda item that was part of my appeal on the carbon fee and dividend. Are you familiar with that?
Tell us about that.
So the carbon fee and dividend principle is something that has been touted by economists and scientists as maybe one of the best ways to influence production of fossil fuel or reducing fossil fuel burning, because it would give us a really strong incentive to change how we do things. The way carbon fee works is any industry that is somehow extracting either coal or oil, any extractive industry that's going to have a resultant level of pollution coming from it, you actually put a fee by weight on that pollutant that's going to be produced. So what would we do with the money that comes from the fee? It would go to the government, and that would be used in theory to remediate the problems of the pollution that's going to be produced. So that's a very, you know, broad base of what a carbon fee would be. And remediation would be taking those monies and using them to put into clean energy production, research for clean energy, research for reduction of pollution methods. Citizens Climate Lobby, when this idea was first touted, felt very strongly that if we put a fee on carbon, it would make prices go up. It would make oil go up. It would make gasoline go up. And it would hurt us. It would hurt individuals. It would hurt the poor. So the idea of taking that dividend and redistributing it back to folks to make it more fair so that people who would be hurt in the pocketbook would get a reimbursement seems like a really good idea to us. You know, that's what we were really pushing for. We would use something like the IRS that gave us money back during our taxes or also during epidemic times. We have a vehicle in place where we could give money back. So that's carbon fee and dividend. Some people call it a tax. You could call it a fee. You could call it pollution fee. But if we had such a thing in place, it would put pressure on the production of the fossil fuel producers to shift what they're doing. If they're having to pay more and more, they're not going to make as much a profit. They would make more money if they would invest in maybe converting their coal plant to a solar or wind if it were accessible, or a clean little nuclear plant, something so that they're not producing fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where that stands. There have been a bunch of models made of, you know, what we need to do in the future to get our carbon levels down even more. We're on track by trying to do cleaner energy. We're trying to have cleaner forests or healthier forests that can absorb and plant more trees. We're trying to conserve. And the models will give you little changes in trends and the amounts of success we're going to have over time, changing temperatures globally. But if you overlay a carbon fee and dividend on whatever we're currently doing, it is the one that brings down temperatures more reliably and a little more quicker than some of the other methods we need to push.
Mm-hmm.
Did I explain that?
You did. You explained it. I'm just thinking about the whole big scenario here about how to Well, you mentioned hope. So where is my hope in this? And I'm just talking about myself. I wonder what my listeners are thinking right now. Perhaps the same thing. It's like, in some ways, you're like letting, this is an opinion, Martha. It's like you're letting people still drill and mine coal and so forth. And then you're going to make them pay more money. That's going to get used to combat, could circumvent the mess that they just made.
I
bet you get that argument.
We do a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's important here in New Mexico. We have oil and gas producers.
We do.
It's a big part of the, especially in our congressional district, and it's a big concern. And when we go and talk to representatives that represent fossil fuel producing areas, you know, we need to come with some knowledge about how we're going to do this and not really adversely affect the people, especially here. We have small producers in New Mexico. So we need to create alternative options for making a living for people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Indeed. Indeed, yep. You do. Yeah, it's something that has to be, you've thought it out. How is this going to be received, and what are you going to do with people who no longer have jobs?
Exactly.
Yes,
we need to have a workforce and create more jobs also. And if we can create those jobs in the clean energy industry, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Sort of like the auto workers, they're going to be moving to making electric cars.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big switch. And, you know, UAW, we're like, okay, well, what are you going to do, close our plants? And then what are we going to do with, like, these thousands of workers, right? Well, they're going to be hopefully grandmothered into the next level of electric car manufacturing.
Right.
We're not going to just pull the plug on these people.
No, and if we can all get on the bandwagon, it will move towards those goals with a little more ease.
That's right.
Yep.
And you're driving that bandwagon.
Well, we're trying. Well,
you're working on it.
A lot of people are working. There are lots of organizations doing this.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yep.
It is. Well, so what was one of your biggest challenges when you were in this work? What is one of the biggest challenges for you?
I think the big challenge I mentioned already is just the slow process that it takes to get something introduced and to have it passed. But that goes hand in hand with the other challenges, which is just the engagement of folks. I think getting people who are actively thinking and concerned and have them switched into people who are actively thinking and concerned but proactive, that's a big challenge. We have 800 members of Citizens Climate Lobby in our state, but the members who are actually doing some of the boots on the ground work of reaching out, educating, doing letter writing, talking to people, we need to grow that force because that's the force that pushes for change. Grassroots change can be effective. It has to have active volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You need a force behind that.
Yep.
If you're just tuning in, folks, here on Tuesday Morning Beat, I'm speaking with Martha Martinez Del Rio, and she is a volunteer with the Citizens Climate Lobby. It's fascinating. Citizens Climate Lobby has been around since 2008. It's relatively new, but yet you've made a lot of progress, it sounds like.
I think so. I think we have a voice that we're heard in Congress and where people ask our opinions in Congress, and that's awesome.
They look to you for information.
They do. We have a small staff of super educated people, and a lot of our volunteers are just super educated, and they share information.
Mm-hmm. That's important. Very important work. CitizensClimateLobby.org. That's where you can go to get more information. But I think we're getting. I so appreciate what you're doing, Martha. What else do you want to tell us? I want to hear a little bit about perhaps what inspired you. I mean, you had mentioned that this was a climate science group that was focused on one thing as opposed to being scattered, and it was well organized. But what about climate change what was the impetus for you to work for climate change?
I think maybe it's just my love for the planet. You know, it's kind of fun to do this talk right before the cusp of the celebration of our wilderness area locally.
It's our life. It's our beautiful life. It's our beautiful world. Yeah. Gosh, yes, it's deep and it's inspiring, and we are here together we are the caregivers. We have been entrusted with this earth, and there are people who feel very strongly about it, and I am grateful to each and every one of you who do feel strongly about this, and that we need to ensure the safety of our planet. So, thank you so much for tuning in to Tuesday Morning Beat here on KURU, Gila Members Community Radio. And I want once again thank my guest, Martha Martinez Del Rio from Citizens Climate Lobby, for coming into the station today and talking to us about the work of Citizens Climate Lobby. You can also go to citizenclimatelobby.org. They have an amazing website. It's full of information. You can learn the backstory. You can find out what's going on now. Lots of information and learning from that website. So once again, thank you, Martha Martinez Del Rio.